Joining us now for the Middle East Report, James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at Singapore's S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and Middle East Institute, joining us live from Singapore this morning and this early afternoon for him. Good afternoon, James.
Good morning. Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for joining us, James, once again, making yourself as available as always. Well, James, it's been a few weeks now since the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, and we already see a number of political changes, not necessarily related to Central Asia, that's there, you know, with China, Russia, and Pakistan already attempting to stake a claim in the new Afghanistan, but also the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan spawns closer Arab ties with Israel. How is that working out, James?
Well, I'm not sure that it is a change as much more a strengthening and an intensification of a process that was already taking place. Keep in mind that you had four Arab states now a year ago, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan, establishing relations with Israel. But what you are seeing in the wake of Afghanistan and growing uncertainty in the Middle East about the reliability of the United States as a security guarantor, you're seeing relations and alliances being reinforced. So you had the visit to Egypt for the first time in 10 years by an Israeli prime minister, and apparently much closer cooperation between Egypt and Israel. You have the Emirati economy minister talking about taking trade with Israel within the next couple of years to $1 trillion. So, in other words, you're talking about an intensification of these relationships rather than a radical change in them.
James, moving on to Central Asia, and of course Afghanistan now being the focal point for many the news media with regards to what's happening in that particular Central Asian region. Recent events have created some sort of a Gulf scramble for power in the region, and I'm sure many would agree that Qatar may be a top dog or a top runner in that particular race. But other, regional powerhouses, your UAE, your Kuwait, even Bahrain for that matter, also get involved, not so much from a diplomatic point of view, but certainly from a humanitarian and an aid point of view. And now we've seen Saudi Arabia as well sending aid convoys. How are we to see a Gulf scramble in that area? I mean, noting that Afghanistan, although not bordering the Gulf in any way, that there is a high measure of Afghanis that work, in that area. So repatriations from that area, as well as future investments in what may, likely be, should the area stabilize, be an area that's an area of opportunity.
Well, I think, first of all, what we're seeing, and we saw this before the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, we've been seeing this for some time, that the notion of the traditional boundaries of the Middle East as we know them are increasingly becoming blurred, and it's increasingly difficult to separate the Middle East either from South Asia, at least when it comes to Pakistan, as well as from Central Asia, including Afghanistan. Now, in terms of Afghanistan, clearly this was an enormous diplomatic and PR victory for Qatar, who hosted the Taliban office, the only office the Taliban have outside of Afghanistan, where the negotiations took place with the United States, and played a very important role in the final withdrawal and evacuation from Afghanistan of U.S. forces and those associated with them. So what you're seeing is Gulf positioning on a number of levels. There's obviously the humanitarian aid, which is the easiest and the most basic. But what you're also seeing, for example, the fact that the former Saudi head of intelligence, who was the head of intelligence both at the time of the jihad against the Soviets with Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, as well as when the Taliban first came to power 25 years ago, namely Prince Turki al-Faisal, having recently met with the Taliban again. So this goes far beyond humanitarian aid. For the Saudis, it's particularly sensitive because they were the ones that, together with the United States, funded the jihad in, against the Soviet Union, out of which groups like Al-Qaeda ultimately emerged. And Saudi Arabia is trying to put a very different foot forward today, namely one of a moderate, tolerant Islamic Muslim majority state, rather than one that is Puritan and inward-looking. Yet the model, in some ways, that the Afghans or the Taliban are choosing, at least, for example, with their ministry for the prevention of vice and the protection of virtue, is something that ultimately was first established in Saudi Arabia, even if Prince Mohammed bin Salman has radically moved it back and cut its powers.
Moving on to other battles coming out of the region, James, Iran is hoping to be accepted by the China-dominated Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Now, we've seen a number of these, corporations and a number of these institutions established globally. I mean, we've got the BRICS here in South Africa is a member, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. This Shanghai Cooperation Organization is another one, dominated again by China, but incorporating a number of regional players. What's Iran's role there?
Well, Iran's an observer with the SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, has long wanted to be a member. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, until now, has held that off primarily for two reasons. One, because of the sanctions that the United States and before that the UN had imposed on Iran, but also because they want the organization as an organization and its members want to balance their relationships between Iran and its rivals in the Gulf, primarily Saudi Arabia and the UAE. Membership basically would give Iran a veto over membership of any other country, because the membership is accepted by unanimously. And that's something that the other states have wanted to avoid. The question is whether the paradigm in the battlefield, if you wish, have shifted as a result of the events and developments in Afghanistan. Iranian membership is now being supported and put forward by Tajikistan. The Russian media have said that Russia would support that application. Now, the application process, if the application were entertained at the Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit in Dushanbe today, if it were entertained, the application process would take 2 years, and it may be that's what the SCO is betting on.
Finally, James, Saudi Arabia pushing to be a major player in the world of football. I suppose this year would mean soccer, not the other type of football. When and why now? I mean, is it in some response to the attention Qatar is going to receive in the next couple of years, or is this their way of soft diplomacy through cultural and sporting links to the rest of the world?
It's both. Saudi Arabia has been trying to become a powerhouse and hasn't done very well in those terms since Mohammed bin Salman came to power. What it's trying now is two things. One is to push through that the World Cup would be held every 2 years rather than every 4 years, something which the Europeans are bitterly opposed to. And it's also trying to get the hosting of the World Cup in 2030 either with Egypt or with Italy, which would allow it to put the focus of of the World Cup post Qatar on Saudi Arabia rather than on anybody else.
James Dorsey, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Islam International. It's been a pleasure talking to you, sir, and have a good weekend ahead.
Always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.